Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven, stay driven.
My name is Matt Jocelyn, alive with the host with the most, Smith Park. Today on the Heart Grapevine, we have a legendary guest with us. Over 20 years with the WWF as their top Latin broadcaster and one of the best promoters going on the independent circuit today, Mr. Hugo Savinovich. Welcome, Hugo. How are you today?
Chicken. Tangara. That's my play-by-play calling. Spanish, thank you for the invitation, and God bless you guys.
Thank you, Hugo. Nice to talk to you again, brother.
Well, we were talking a little bit off air a little bit, and we'd like to kind of just continue with that conversation. Hugo, we were talking about how you're running a lot of promotions down in South America, Chile specifically. You're running with some great talent, guys like Ken Anderson, Carlito, MVP, the Hardy Boys, Rey Mysterio. You're running with the best free agent talents in great cities. Tell us a little bit about the promotions that you're running down in South America right now, if you don't mind.
Yes, it's called Wrestling Superstar.
The best free agent talents in great cities. Tell us a little bit about the promotions that you're running down in South America right now, if you don't mind. Wrestling Superstar. Might have a little bit of an echo. If you don't mind, continue there. Sorry about that.
Yes, the biggest dream of mine was after my contract ended with WWE was to go to different Latin countries and produce not just house shows, but I create an ambience of a pay-per-view-like show, paying my talent good guarantees, treating them right, and giving the fans good storylines with a good production. I built music entrances that are not copied from whatever companies they work at, and I create an environment to also help the new talent from Chile to come up with new characters, and from Randy Stereo to MVP, Carlito, all these guys. Like for this next show on August 7th, it's called Fight Forever. The main event is Jeff and Matt Hardy against the Young Bucks. And then I'm introducing, for the first time ever, it's called the World's Lucha Submission Championship. No draws, no disqualification, no time limit. You have to win the title by submission only. So I got Pentagon Jr. from Lucha Underground against one of the best independent wrestlers in the world right now, Ricochet. And they're going to have a tremendous bout. And I have Chavo Guerrero against Mr. Kennedy. I got the Sons of the of Samoa in going for the titles against Hellspawn and Gladiator Angel. And I got Robbie E. and from Canada, Mr. Fantastic. And I got Ivelisse for the world title against Santana Garrett. And I got Drago against 450. So every match on the card has a storyline. And then, of course, we create characters that will appear unannounced during the show, and everything is done like beautiful music entrances with the big screens, and it looks like if you were in a small Madison Square Garden. And the boys, you know, they are really happy to work in a place where the fans go crazy for them. They get treated well. I put them in the best hotels. I treat them right, and then they want to come back. And, you know, it's a win-win situation, and we want to be able to bring these shows around the world. You know, do these shows for everybody that, you know, want to buy the show or co-produce it with us, with a guarantee that it's not just a house show. Give me the money and put six matches on, and that's it. I don't want to do that. I want to create, you know, something that I'm passionate about, that I did from when I was 14 years old. You know, I want to keep doing great shows.
It's a varied spectrum out there, and you're covering quite a bit of it there with your hopes and your aspirations, Hugo.
Now, with this, are you looking to get any kind of television deals, distribution, pay-per-view? Are you recording this, and are there North American fans that are going to be able to see the product that you're putting out?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I am in the process of the biggest network in Chile. Chile is one of those countries where, like, when the big rock groups from the United States go, they put in 70,000-80,000 people. Their economy is solid. So if you produce a good show and you have a good product, you have the opportunity not only to do well there, but also you will attract fans and TV networks from Brazil all the way up to my country, Ecuador. So right now we have this show coming up. There's a couple of networks that have been invited to see it live because they have, you know, copies of the product, but they want to, you know, I always tell them, I could send you the tape and you will see it, but I want you to come and sit down and enjoy it live. So that's what we are doing. And I also do production, help produce, and do play-by-play on the pay-per-views for AAA in Mexico. I just finished doing the World Cup about a month and a half ago. And I'm going to be doing for them, producing and doing play-by-play on pay-per-view for AAA. Their big event is called Triple Mania. So I'm all over the place. You know, we help each other. We form alliances with AAA, Lucha Underground, other companies, and I believe in doing alliances. And so that's what we're doing. And I'm helping a group that does movies in Latin America, and they're going to star in Peru to do some taping. So I'm gonna work together with them, and to me, is I like to help people. I don't close myself in my own little box. I want to help out. I believe that when you do that, you build good, solid alliances. You know, and that's the way I operate.
That's right. You do.
Now, and moving on with that, now you've listed off amazing talents that you're working with right now. And I've often made the point that the free agent market in pro wrestling today is probably better than any other time in history. And I'd even go as far as to say that the free agent market is better than the WWE's roster itself. If you were to bank on one person, who would you say is the most marketable star right now that is a free agent that could be an it player and basically a player that a company could build themselves around today that's working for you right now?
Of course, Rey Mysterio is really solid, and we have Carlito. I think Carlito, Caribbean Cool. I just believe that we never got to really see his whole potential when he was with WWE. I believe he's more mature now. He's in the best shape of his life. Ring psychology, physically and mentally. I think that right now, if he was to sign a contract with one of the big groups, right now he will be your money guy, your franchise. And also Ricochet. I think that even though he's been on a contract with a mask in Lucha Underground, the same thing that happened with CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, if you create a good storyline for him and you devote some time to build stories around him, This is not going to happen overnight because it didn't happen with Daniel Bryan or CM Punk. But if you're faithful to what you're doing and you invest in the guy for about a year, I mean, the payoff will be huge because this guy is good.
It's that David Copperfield mentality, the beaten down orphan, the struggling, you know, the underdog that triumphs. It's a good concept. You know, it's totally babyface.
Yes, definitely. And I agree with you guys. There's a lot of talent out there. And even the ones that some of them that have already contracts, we still see the fact that they have not been used to their full potential. So when you see guys like the Young Bucks, wow, you know, they go to Japan and they draw big with the Bullet Club, but yet with Ring of Honor, they haven't really gotten the best of what they're capable of doing. So I'm going to have the opportunity to take a shot at them when they work with the Hardys, and I have already signed for another. So as a producer, my goal is going to be to be an inspiration for guys, you're good, but you have to take it to another level. And the way I do it is I create the storyline, and then they get into a position where they said, hey, we could do this in Japan, we could do this in the States, and then, you know, everybody wins.
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, you just mentioned the word producer when you referred to your stuff there. Now, producer is kind of a modern term to wrestling. Is that the extent of your position with this promotion? Are you the booker, the producer? Are you a part owner? Or, like, how intrinsically involved are you with this promotion?
I don't have money involved in the company, but the promoter contracted me to be the storyline guy. I have a team, but I start the storylines, and basically I have a open table discussion to improve the storyline. But I'm more or less right now as we start. I believe this could change as we have, you know, more money to operate. But right now I am in charge of basically everything. The only thing I don't do is put money in the company. I'll do the play-by-play on when we do the voiceovers for the shows, so we have everything ready to sell to the networks. And I'm also in charge of booking the talent, negotiating with them the deals, and also to sit down with the networks and talk to them about the projects. From reality shows with my characters to actual TV shows on the network, I'm in charge of everything, and my contract assigns that for all the things that I do, there's a written agreement where, you know, my cut will be from sales of the product to merchandising to, you know, the whole concept. Yeah.
Well, you know, like with this, you're obviously no stranger to big events, and obviously we could go on for a while about this new promotion. We'll come back to it, but you were actually one of the few people that was part of the inaugural Starrcade, which is pretty much the original pay-per-view of all pay-per-views, back in Greensboro, North Carolina in 1983. What can you tell us about that event being part of what was the pioneer of all pay-per-view events?
Oh, yeah. And at the time, also, like many of the young comers to our industry, they don't know that there was a group that had control of the world. I was the NWA was, you know, ruler, even though you had Worldwide Wrestling Federation and World Class and the wrestling in Puerto Rico
and
Vergaña. You had World Class with the Van Erichs and the New Japan and Inoki's company and Carlos in Puerto Rico. They were all part of the NWA, and each had a vote. So it was a big organization, and nobody was really dreaming of taking it to another level. I think they were happy with the way things were, until that Starrcade idea, that concept of the closed circuit, market came about because they said if it worked to make Muhammad Ali a world phenomenon, you know, it could work for wrestling. And that Starrcade in North Carolina, it was, first of all, it was snowing. It was like really bad weather. I remember that the owner of the NWA at that time, it was based out of North Carolina. We did the tapings in different buildings, different towns, and then we went to the studio, the home base. The Graphic Promotions were the main owners of the NWA, and by 5 o'clock in that afternoon, they were very worried because of the streets, and they were slippery and snow coming down and everything. But the wrestling fans will defy. They're like hockey fans, you know. Snow. Unless they cancel the game, they're gonna go and enjoy the wrestling. The thing was amazing. It was sold out, and you just knew that you were a part of something. Maybe not the whole magnitude that was like the birth of what would be later on the pay-per-views, but somehow everybody knew that it was something special happening on that Starrcade, and boy, did they put a hell of a show. I mean, from top to bottom, it was just an incredible display of good wrestling with solid storylines, and well done.
And during that event, you were actually managing, if I'm not mistaken, you were with Abdullah the Butcher. Is that correct?
Yes. It was an international feud. As a matter of fact, the event simultaneously there was a wrestling show in Puerto Rico where they were watching some live matches, and also the big screen of Starrcade. And because Carlos Colon, their champion, was going to be defending the title against the guy that I managed. I managed the mean Abdullah the Butcher, and I will come in and say, "Mi monster," like my monster, "Mi monster, mi monster, Abdullah, Abdullah, Abdullah," and the place will go crazy. So they had Abdullah the Butcher against Carlos Colon, and I was barred from ringside, so they threw me back in the restroom. And at the end, when Carlos was about to win, I come in with a loaded sock and hit him on the head, and Abdullah was able to beat him. And boy, we're talking about, it was tough getting out of the ring and Starrcade, going back to the restroom. I got kicked and everything, you know. So back then, you know that the angle was done effectively when you know the fans were like wanting to kill you.
Maybe
so,
kill you.
Yeah. Yes. So it was fun to be part of an historic event at Starrcade. You know, the what that was like, what really started all the pay-per-views.
Absolutely. We mentioned Abdullah the Butcher there, and obviously he was huge in Stampede Wrestling. Another guy that was very huge in Stampede Wrestling that you managed was one of Smith's favorites. Can you tell us what it was like managing the Stomper, Archie Stomper the Goldie?
Oh wow, it was it was an incredible his physical abilities and the way he looked. It was like a gladiator, and he had that look that if you knew how to do good editing and you could just take a couple of shots of his body looks and the facial expressions and a couple of the moves he did in the ring edited well and just put together. Man, you had a mean guy.
He was one of the greatest heel talkers of all time.
Yeah, and especially when my market was from Puerto Rico to St. Thomas, St. Croix, and then we went to Port of Spain, Trinidad. So we had different cultures. Watching this gigantic guys that were like superheroes going straight into your city, into your country, with a great show, you know. So to me, it was like it was such an honor to be able to carry doing the production, being the play-by-play guy, the host, and bringing all these talented guys to Jamaica and all the places. I know Smith. That you also booked shows into the islands, and it was something always special about, it was like, oh boy, I'm making money, and yet I'm in paradise, you know.
Oh yeah, it was great. I had we had fantastic angles on all the matches, and you know, my dad just kind of took it over at that point, and then they kind of overdid it, and you know, I don't know why the thing just kind of faded at that point, but there was a good. It was a very good turnout at this cricket stadium.
We're to move on a little bit further, and you know, not to be completely jumped from one topic to another. One thing that is a little bit different from other conversations. You actually have a very deep history with our host Smith here, and if I'm not mistaken, was Smith not the best man at your wedding? Is that correct?
I didn't hear the whole question. It broke up a little bit.
You have a history with Smith Hart here. He was Smith the best man at your first wedding. Is that correct?
We've been friends like for so long. I believe that when he got married with a Puerto Rican girl, I probably knew that before his own family found out. We stuck together, and it's always been mutual respect and very little unknown fact. One of the first international matches, Bret Hart and Smith Hart, we had a tag team match at the Heron Stadium in San Juan, Puerto Rico, over 22,000 fans. Bret Hart and Smith Hart against Cowboy. Frank Williams, the guy that got beat up by Roddy Piper on the Piper's Pit, and myself. So I had the opportunity to work with the Hard Boys when they were just coming, you know, out of Stampede to showcase their talent to other places. You know, they were, you know, young guys, and boom, they were in Puerto Rico, and I had the opportunity, and I am so proud of that, you know. I mean,
we're having fun. It was a beautiful time, you know, it's a great time there. It's like being in Hawaii almost.
Yeah, legendary family of the Hart. You know the Hart are famous everywhere, but there was something about the Harts with the Puerto Rican community. I believe there were so many stories about the patriarch of the family, Stu, and his voice. That whenever we had any of them booked, it was like they have heard so much about, you know, the stories of the family that they were like, you know, they were huge, you know, stars before even coming to the island.
Another guy that was on the island there with you at the same time with when you were there with Hart, Michelle Martel. Were you there the night that Michelle Martel passed away in the ring?
Yes, as a matter of fact, recently I went to Canada just to pray and hug the one that worked as the brother. It was Pierre and Michel Martel, the Martel brothers, and Frenchie Martin, Pierre Martel. He's got cancer, so I went down there to hug him and spent 2 days with him. The Martels were the top international team that would sell out stadiums all over the Caribbean. And that night, it was a Friday night, 1.5 hour away from San Juan, Puerto Rico, a city called Ponce, Puerto Rico, the Pachín Vicente Coliseum. They had the match, and we were back in the dressing room. I was managing Abdullah that night. We were back in the dressing room, and Michelle says to Pierre, "Wow, you know," he says, "I felt like really, really, really bad. I felt like I was going to die, but they had a match against the Invader, and it was like the gimmick of the Heart Punch and everything." And he was like dizzy, and they brought him out of the ring. Nothing happened there. It was just part of the match. But he said to Pierre, "Wow, for a little bit, I felt like I was gonna die. So he took the shower. You know how we are in the dressing rooms. Everybody's ribbing each other and this and that. And one of the Fabulous Kangaroos, Don Ken, is there. Al Costello is there. So we're having fun. I hug. I kiss Michelle. I kiss Pierre. They get in the car, and they go towards San Juan. I go left towards Mayo West. I used to live there. My son was a baby, and I lived in that side of the island. And he went right. I went left. And at the time, we did, you know, it wasn't like now where you have cellular phones or whatever. we went our different ways, and then I found out through the radio that one of the famous wrestlers, Michelle Martel, has died in Ponce, Puerto Rico. It was over the radio, and because it was late at night, so they didn't have like the news, telecast at that time. But the radio was saying Michelle Martel has died. And I said to my wife, "This is crazy. Cannot be." I hugged him, I kissed him, I said hello. He was driving, and then that morning I went to San Juan and to see that find out. And Frenchie Martin, Pierre Martel, said Michelle sat down next to him. Everything was okay. They come out of the Coliseum when I say goodbye. I went left. They went right, and when they reached the corner traffic light, he just his head went right on top of the shoulder of Frenchie Martin, of Pierre Martel. And Pierre thought that it was, like a concussion, symptom of, when you get a concussion. And he said, okay, we're going to go to the hospital because I think you got a concussion and you don't know about it. And Michelle never said a word.
Hugo, I wrestled Pierre that night. I wrestled him the night that he died.
Yeah, and he said he thought he had just had a concussion. But when they made it to the emergency, and it didn't take him not even 2 minutes. The doctor said he's dead. And
he was getting bulked up. It could have been a heart attack, steroid, or something related.
Yeah, it was just so sad. One of the nicest guys you could meet, and he was the real brother of a guy who became a huge star, especially with the AWA in Japan, Rick Martel, and also with the gimmick with the old WWF as a model, but. He was a real life brother of Rick Martel, and when Rick came to the funeral,
you got Ricky into wrestling the hard way against the Stomper right off when Ricky was barely 16. And Michelle pushed for him hard enough that my dad went for it and started an angle with Michelle and the Stomper, and then Ricky, and it got over good, and Ricky caught on good. Ricky was a real good looking kid and a big kid for his age, and took care of himself, worked out hard. And, gentleman, bilingual, he did well and deserved it.
To move on a little bit further, now, if I'm not mistaken, you were married to Wendy Richter, is that correct? At one point?
Yes, I've been married 4 times. She was my third wife. My first wife shot me. She almost killed me.
Oh, really?
So marriages. Marriages were a very, very, very dangerous situation with me. And with the second wife, I had my boy, Giovanni. The third one was one of my best friends. Like Smith could tell you, one of the best people you could meet. Wendy was like one of the buddies. And, we fell in love, and then we got married. And it was 5 beautiful years. She was a champion of Vince McMahon. I was the opposition to Vince. And Vince would say to me, "I want you to come and work with me with his family." I said, "That's not a smart move, because then the two checks will be coming out of the same pocket. And if you get upset with her or with me, you're going to fire the two of us, and then my house is not going to have any money." Which was true. It was a very practical way of looking at it. So, yes, we had a tremendous relationship. It ended, it was very sad because we didn't have a fight or anything. It was just my father-in-law died out of terminal cancer. And that just took the life out of Wendy. And then my mother-in-law, she had the heavy bone arthritis that is really like a crippling arthritis. And it was just we even had a dog, a boxer, and we had to put him away. So it was like so many things happening at the same time. And she said, "Hugo, you always like to make people laugh, and you're so friendly with people. And I'm just turning, very unhappy. I don't want to ruin your life." And she gave me a hug. She gave me a kiss. We sold our properties, everything. It was no lawyers involved, no fights, anything. And it was just like, it was sad, but it was beautiful at the same time, because there was no fights, nothing here, nothing there. So, yeah, I bless her wherever she is right now. It was fun because I was part of the WWE when she was exalted into the Hall of Fame of WWE. So that's when we got to see each other again, and we hugged and we kissed, and I said, "Thank you very much. You were so beautiful to me. God bless you." And I said hello to her boyfriend, and it was so nice. So nice.
Yeah.
Were you able to be there with her at the inaugural WrestleMania?
I was not inside of the actual like the ringside, but I was the guy that took the picture. Muhammad Ali had his own camera, and he wanted to take a picture with my wife. So I was taking the picture of Muhammad Ali with my wife and Cindy Lauper, and it was always funny because he was like one of my biggest idols, and I froze.
Yeah.
I couldn't even do anything. He's talking to me, and you take a picture, and I'm right there, and I froze. I wanted to take a picture with him, and I never had like this. I was just like, I just could not say.
That happened to me. Yeah, that's a shame.
Yes. And it's crazy because he was next to me, he was talking to me, and that was it. I missed out on taking a picture because when you do pay per view, like I did announcing and all that for WWE for almost 20 years, when all these good things are happening, that the rock stars and the actors are back in the dressing room. You're solidly, if it's a WrestleMania, you're like 4 hours in ringside, and by the time you come back into the dressing room, all the big stars are gone. So you miss out on a lot of the fun when you're doing the play by play.
So what you mentioned there that you didn't go to work for WWE or WWF at the time back in 1984-85 when you had the first opportunity. How did you come about getting the opportunity to go back and work for WWF? What was around 1990?
Yeah. Here comes the Hart family again in my life. As I met Smith and Brett as young guys, then now Brett is become, a huge international superstar, winning Athlete of the Year in Germany and all that. And I had problems with the owners of the company in Puerto Rico because they were not paying me. And Savio Vega is in tour with Bret Hart. And Savio says to Bret, Hugo's having some financial problems because the Puerto Rico office is not paying him what they owe him. And he has a bar. And he's going through a little bit of dangerous thing because they had like an illegal casino and everything. And he says to Bret, and I don't feel it's safe for him to be doing things like that. And Bret says, I didn't know. And they went and talked to Vince and said, hey, listen, Hugo is running a bar. He's not doing wrestling. And he called me the next morning. And I had just closed the bar, the legal casino. At the time, I was doing drugs and I was drunk. And one of the guys that I knew, one of the bushwhackers, one of the Luke Williams, he will do impressions and imitate voices. And he will call your house like at 3 o'clock in the morning and do this and that. So the phone rings, and I think it's Luke Williams, and he says, this is Vince McMahon, and I just talked to Savio and Bret Hart and something that you're not doing wrestling, and then you have a bar. And I'm thinking it's Luke Williams, and, for about 10 minutes, I say, yeah, right. And then finally Vince says to me, this is Vince McMahon. And then it was like silence, and I said, and then I realized that it wasn't Luke Williams, and I had been talking to Vince, and I wasn't paying attention because I thought it was my friend, the bushwhacker Luke Williams, and he says, I want you to come over and spend a month with us. At the time, it was not this deal like now, the contract and the night lawyers and all this stuff right now. At the time, it was just pick me up at the airport, Limbo St. Marco, the Brazilian personal driver of Vince. I went to his mansion. We sat there. It was Pat Patterson and Bruce Pritchard. Then he said, hey, listen, I want you to work for me. And but not just the Spanish. I want you to, be creative with Patterson and Bruce Pritchard and me. And stay around for a month. We'll decide, what you want to do afterwards. And that was it. So he says, but if you are part of my team, you have to cut your hair. At the time, I had earrings like Roman centurion rings and earrings, and I was like that. My gimmick was all the way for TV and everything.
Yeah.
So, and he said, you have to cut your hair, you don't have to wear a tie. And I said, listen, if we do business, I don't need the tie and the earrings and the jewelry to live. That's just part of my gimmick, and whatever is going to make me money, I'm willing to do that. So I spent a month.
Yeah.
And then from that time to the first time that I got fired because I went up in jail and everything, he was the guy that really negotiated my contract until the time that my contract finished. I never had to fight for a raise. He really took his family and him took care of me really well. Even when I was at my worst, they were good to me.
Our producer Mike here, he had a question about what it was like running at the ringside there. Mike, you had a question here for Hugo?
Sorry. My son Matthew, I'm at his house. He just came back in. We ran out of barbecue fuel.
I have a question. What was it like when the wrestlers would crash through your Spanish announce table?
Oh, my God. That became, at the time, there was like a cartoon. I can't recall any of the cartoons, but we were like the Spanish announcers were like the Kenny, the guy that really got beat up on every episode. I can't remember the cartoons at the time. We were like the Spanish Kenny of TV. The first time that our table was destroyed, the audio picked up the Spanish play-by-play. And people from France, Germany, United States, they went crazy for the sound in another language with the table being destroyed. And the guys just, they would fall on top of us. And it was just like craziness because we never knew nothing was going to happen. So I don't know where you're doing play-by-play and somebody just comes through like if you were part of a bowling game. They just run you over. Boom. And it got to the point where the biggest pop of the night was when they cleared the Spanish table. It was like, wow, crazy stuff. And when they broke the table, so that was like, it became huge when they broke the Spanish table. Yeah, it was really, really a nice little ingredient that was like a little extra for the fans. Because they didn't want to go home until the Spanish table was broken.
I have another question about being ringside, and I don't know if this is a painful memory or not. It was WrestleMania 19. It was a bit of an incident that you had at ringside. Can you elaborate on what happened at ringside of WrestleMania 19?
Oh my God, that's when you say you take one for the team. It was Hulk Hogan against the owner of the company, and because on the real life they have had a feud since the federal court case with Vince McMahon and Hogan being one of the witnesses of the government, and it was like a big fallout between them, and finally they made peace, and then it was like the creator of Hulk Hogan wanted to destroy his creation, so it was like a good storyline, and they felt like he needed something different to happen, and that was when Vince was a bloody mess, and they went close to the table, and it was done in such a good way that Stone Cold and Booker T would later tell me that as they're watching on the screen in the back, they see that they're approaching my table, and they don't see me moving, and Austin says, "Damn it, he was in the way," and then when Vince ducks, and then he hits me with a chair. Then, everybody knew that it was, part of the WrestleMania mystique. And, another moment in one of those events that you got to write stuff that has to be done at the right moment. And it was done. And then the hearing my Spanish compadre, Carlos Cabrera, saying in Spanish, "Oh, they just hurt my friend Hugo in Spanish. Ah, lastimado, mi amigo Hugo." It was like the whole thing just worked out perfect, and it was perfect because, like, nobody really knew about it. It was like a top secret thing, and it was old school. If you could stop it and replay it, and you're not going to see hands going up, it was like, I told Hulk, "I'm old school," and he made a believer out of me that I was hit by a Hulk, because he really let me have it, and it was like, when you know that you got hit by a Hulk Hogan, that was my night.
Hugo, Carlos Colon had one very good announcer for a while. Very Ricky, I think maybe his name was. I'm not sure.
Ricky Sanchez. Ricky Sanchez
yeah,
was
Ricky Sanchez, yeah.
Yes, he was the guy. He came from the industry of doing play-by-play from the Olympic basketball teams and professional baseball in Spanish. And he was also the owner of the TV network that produced the show. So this guy brought in this seriousness of being a journalist. So it was just good. But the problem was that it was like rich people fighting with each other. Carlos and Jovica, power struggle, fighting the owner of this producing TV company. And that's what made it, go sour.
That's too bad. They could have kept it going maybe all this time.
Yeah, big
way.
Well, Smith, before we let Hugo go, do you have any other questions for Hugo for tonight?
Not really. I can't think of any. I probably do, but I'm just hoping that Hugo will keep me in mind and we'll get together soon. I got lots of good ideas, and I think he's on to a very worthwhile thing. And however, I wish him all luck in the world, and I'm sure it will succeed. He's got great everything going for it, so talent included.
And Hugo, do you have can you let us know where we can follow you? Like, I'd love to keep learning more about your promotion. I'd love to learn more about your podcast that you do every Tuesday night yourself. And obviously about anything you're doing to administer. Yeah. I know that you're very heavily involved in faith as well. Anything that you want to push right now, we'd love to hear.
Yes, every Tuesday, Eastern Time of the United States, 6:30, it's called La Radio, LA Radio, PR.com. Or you can just go to my page, Hugo Savinovich or Hugo Atangana Savinovich, and I have all the, from the wrestling card into the ministry. I just came from Poughkeepsie with the two nights of faith. I'm not into religion. I'm into relationship. I feel comfortable preaching to 5,000 people, or preaching to one drug addict in a dark alley of Philadelphia or New York, or I go to different countries. And, I'm very thankful that I'm alive. I became a drug addict, and I've been free for 18 and a half years. I was an alcoholic and a gambler, and God set me free. And now I just go around preaching that God still does miracles and love on my boys, on the wrestlers, and just share my experiences, and then you will find out in my pages about the events that I do. I got coming up Fight Forever with the Hardys in Santiago de Chile, August 7th, and then we have at the end of August from Mexico City, Triple Mania, that will be on pay-per-view, and it's been an honor. I love the Hart family. Smith has been a brother, a friend for many years. I pray that God will give him many years of life, that he's healed in Jesus' name. And I am so thankful that that you guys have this, instrument of communication for our fans that love the stories, man. Our fans love stories. And thank you for carrying that passion, and God bless you guys.
God bless little Ted in Mexico.
And thank you for such wonderful stories here tonight. We've really enjoyed having you. You've been one of our best guests, and we certainly hope that we can invite you back another time.
Thank you very much.
Adios, amigo.
Well, Smith, what a fantastic interview. Now, Hugo, I know you and Hugo have known each other for a better part of 30 years here today, and, it's great that you guys have been able to stay in communication all these years, and we certainly love hearing old stories from old friends, right?
Yeah, we'll do it again.
Absolutely. Now, so just to continue on from last week. Last week we had a pretty in-depth conversation about this lawsuit. And just to give everybody a heads up here, Smith actually posted on his Facebook a link to a website for the lawyers that are involved in this. And we've actually invited the lawyers that are involved in this lawsuit that are representing these 53 wrestlers. We've invited the lawyers to join us on a broadcast in the future. And we've also had some talks with some of the wrestlers involved with it. So we're going to try and keep people involved with this ahead and informed as we go along. But have you have any thoughts or insights, Smith, a week later?
Not really. I think some cases are very valid and others are very obscure, and nobody's going to prove anything. And we should almost just hope that somebody hires them for a night and gives them a good payoff and tells them to go away and get serious. So many injuries can't be really diagnosed as having taken place a certain time, place, or, I think a lot of them are repetitious, and a lot of these moves that would injure your head are done at your own volition. It's not like you're instructed to go out there and drop your head on a cement floor or hit somebody else in the head hard. That's if that happens, it happens. It's unintentional generally.
Well, going from the wrestler's injuries to your own, you know, every show we seem to get an update from you on your health, and without sparing some of the graphic details of your recent surgery, can you give us a brief update of how you're feeling today?
Well, I'm really happy to say that I'm feeling very good today. I'm at my son Matthew's and his girlfriend Joyce's right now. We're going to barbecue as soon as I hang up. And beautiful weather-wise, and I'm feeling good from recent surgery that was causing me great anguish. And prior to that, I was in even worse pain. And that seems to have abated for the moment. I don't really know why, but there are attacks of cancer on my collarbone, my both hip bones, my spine, my shoulder blades, probably other bones. But they say they're really small. I saw them, and I didn't know how to gauge them. I didn't have the old other previous two bone scans to compare them to. So now I hear that they're not very big, but they can be treated. And my next shot of testosterone annihilator will, get me back on track. Right now I'm bleeding a bit because it's a 6-month injection you get every 6 months for as long as you live. It just keeps killing your male hormones. So, whatever. Keeps you alive, supposedly.
Well, we're glad to hear that you're feeling better, at least as it was to last week, and hopefully week by week we get you feeling better, and hopefully, a year from now or so we can say that you're completely cancer-free.
Yeah, when I'm really feeling bad, when I'm feeling just horrible, like deathly in every sense of the word, and that's how I describe it to anybody or to myself, I'm too weak to even let anybody even know about it. It's usually after the fact when I'm on the comeback that they hear about it. I'm so knocked out by it that I can hardly even stagger out of bed. I'm holding the walls as I go back and forth from my bed to the can, really not functioning too damn deficiently. And, just getting weaker and weaker and, shrinking in all senses of the word, physically and, visibly and every way except possibly spiritually. I'm pretty spiritual.
Wow.
But anyway.
Oh, and can you also let us know, Smith, I believe you had a very important phone call this afternoon. Can you let us know who gave you a quick phone call there this afternoon and tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was Brett just calling. He'd known I was going in for this TURP surgery, and he'd had, even more advanced. He had his whole prostate removed, and I can imagine what that entailed. I was sort of doing it the reverse way where, I was getting the catheter removed to kind of become where I am, and he was getting one put in to be kind of cured of his. But anyway, the case was that he's very satisfied with the doctor, and so am I, and I'm feeling better every day. It took place on Thursday, and now it's Monday night, so
that's good. I'm glad that, you had a nice conversation with your brother Brett today, and we're also happy to let everybody know that we don't have a date set down, but we did discuss about Brett being a member of the part of the show, and Brett did agree, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks we can organize and set down a date where Brett can join us right here live on the air, right?
Yeah, sure. A lot of fans would love to hear that and get in on hearing that, so we'll try and do that properly and keep everybody posted as we progress.
Absolutely. Well, Smith, I'm going to let you get to your son with the barbecue, enjoy some family time. Give Matthew my best. I know Matthew's
a very talented young wrestler, and hopefully somebody that we get to see in the big leagues sometime soon. But, you know, give Matthew my best. Hopefully he'll join us on the show at some point as well. And yourself, take care. Great week. You can find Smith Hart on Twitter at SmithHart1. My name is Matt Johnson. We want to give a special thank you to our producer, Mike, and a very, very special thank you to Hugo Savinovich for being a great guest today. Ladies and gentlemen, we've had a great time. Thank you to Totally Driven Entertainment Radio, and everybody have a great night.
Good night.
Good night, guys. Take care. All right, now Magic Mike is still here. I'm going to put us into a commercial and enjoy.
For $5 today, you can buy a wealth of things. Gas for your car, rent a movie for the family, a few slices of pizza. $5 still takes you a long ways. But did you know that $5 can buy your child a bag of heroin in the streets? That's right. For only $5, your son or daughter can buy some of the cheapest and purest dope in the country. Be aware of the lies. Be aware of the stealing. Be aware that's all it takes to kill your child. $5. This message was brought to you by Casey's Cause, a group of parents located in Southern Chester County out to save your child's life. Come join us today at www.caseyscause.com. And remember, $5 is all it takes. Casey's Cause, www.caseyscause.com.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs. Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is the perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Hey everybody, this is Nick Wilkinson with TV Nation and Totally Driven Radio and Entertainment. Sadly, each year, approximately 3.6 million children become victims of child abuse. My latest ebook, Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect, explores the long-lasting effects abuse can have on victims. Explore life after the abuse ends and how we cope with the tragedies of the past. Child Abuse, The Ripple Effect is available on Kindle for only 99 cents. And don't forget to check out my website, actingnotreacting.com, a common sense approach to teens in crisis. Let's work together and make this world a better place. And remember, stay driven.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromHolmes.
Are you looking for a mortgage for that new home? Do you want to refinance to a lower rate, obtain cash out, or consolidation? If so, call Anthony Muscarella of Advisors Mortgage Group. Advisors Mortgage Group is a mortgage banker and loan our own money to first lien mortgage loans. We have built a platform for a seamless and stress-free mortgage process, which remains our number one goal for all of our customers. We understand that success cannot be obtained without teamwork and communication, two of our most important strengths. If you're looking to apply for a loan or simply have some questions, please don't hesitate to give Anthony Muscarella a call at 732-749-3333, extension 12, who, by the way, has been recognized by Mortgage Executive Magazine as being one of the top 1% of originators in America. That number again, call Anthony Muscarella at 732-749-3333, extension 12, where we tailor our loans to meet your needs.
Advisors Mortgage Group is an equal housing opportunity lender licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance. Branch NMLS number 173453. Loan officer NMLS number 111400.
Are you ready to be totally driven? Totally Driven Entertainment Network has a full lineup of shows dedicated to total entertainment. Starting on Mondays, we have the always relevant and often hilarious Hard Talk with Big Daddy and Big Booty Trudy. That's at 6 p.m. And at 11 p.m., go 8 flights up and get your mind right. Tuesdays at noon, Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira covers professional wrestling news, rumors, and one-of-a-kind interviews with professional wrestling performers and insiders. At 8 p.m., join Smith Hart of the legendary Hart family dynasty for the Hart Grapevine as he goes behind the scenes and shares his knowledge of the professional wrestling industry and some truly remarkable special interviews, too. Welcome to Hump Day, Wednesdays, 9:30 a.m., the Coco and Wee Wee Show asks the age-old question, who do you love, who do you shove? And at 8 p.m., the Give No F's Cosplay Variety Hour brings you the best in cosplay, comics, video games, and more. Thursday nights at 5 p.m., Pro Wrestling Now with Mike Ferreira returns to the airwaves to cover professional wrestling news, results, and more. At 8 p.m., Totally Driven Radio, the show that started it all, brings you the best in topical conversations, celebrity interviews, exclusive musical guests, and so much more. Your Friday night would be incomplete without a trip to Uncle Shawnee's playground. Join Uncle Shawnee at 8 p.m. and prepare to be offended, but, you know, in a good way. At 10 p.m., don't forget the LAW Retro Wrestling Hour, bringing back the golden age of professional wrestling. Saturday mornings at 10 a.m., the Mojo Sports Show starts your weekend off with a healthy dose of sports mojo. Get the latest news, scores, results, and more every Saturday morning. At 9 p.m., Totally Driven Radio rocks. Bay Ragney unleashes his inner beast as he takes you on a heavy metal journey and looks at the music he thinks rocks. That brings us to Sunday morning, the perfect time for a big weenie. At 10 a.m., the Big Weenie Castanini Show goes live around the world. And ending the week at 9 p.m. on Sunday nights, join the TV Nation for your weekly dose of the Nerd Herd and talk all things comics, TV, movies, and pop culture. Remember, get driven, stay driven.